the Project Blue Book was the official United States Air Force research project into the UFO phenomenon. The Air Force was so worried about it, they formed this project and they put Ruppelt at head of it. There had been other projects, but they were useless. It was decided to have a new broom. He was a very bright guy and a very deep thinker. And of course, when you're a bright guy and a very deep thinker within a corporate organization, you can have problems, particularly if they're involved with alien contact.
Yeah, and he had his problems, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. They did. They did. They wouldn't. What shall we say? They hobbled him, if you know what I mean. They didn't give him the right facilities. They didn't back him up. Although he was there, he was their official representative. He could have had a lot more resources. He only had two or three staff. I think five at maximum. And he was chasing all over the place, all over America, to gather reports about these incredible experiences people were having, from policemen to housewives to pilots and Air Force fighter pilots themselves. It was raw material. It was coming in rapidly. But you have this amazing... This is what makes this whole subject very interesting. This organization, Air Force, which is basically scientific and technological, they're just panicking. And they're trying to stop it. They don't know what to do. It's showing them in a bad light as far as technical intelligence is concerned. They're not quick enough. They don't know what they're doing. Whereas in every other concrete realm, the Air Force is fine. In this realm, they're hopeless. And he reveals that in his book. And it all comes to a head when he gets a telephone call in the mid-July 52. They're over Washington. The lights are over Washington.
All over Washington.
All over Washington, yeah. And he revealed the complete kind of Pearl Harbor situation. There, as you know, Washington at that time had three airports, the National Airport, Bolling, and Andrews Air Force Base. It so happened that repairs were being carried out at Andrews Air Force Base and at Bolling, and there wasn't a single fighter there, an F-94 in those days, to cover the damn capital of the most powerful nation in the world, in which the president was asleep, for God's sake. And at one point... the panic is such that President Truman asks his Air Force representative, not Chief of Staff, to make a phone call concerning what's going off above his sleeping head. Ruppelt lifts the phone, and there's Landry saying, "Would you mind telling me what's going off? Because we're getting reports of, you know, stuff overhead." Which it's quite a phone call to get from a president, that is, you know, I must admit. And Ruppelt said, Landry said, "What's the Air Force doing?" And Ruppelt replied, "If I know the Air Force, sir," he's a serving captain, so he risked being censored here, the Air Force is doing nothing. He said that to Landry. Presumably Landry relayed it straight back to a rather bad-tempered and sleepless Harry Truman.
That's funny. There's nothing the Air Force could have done, Colin.
Well... You see, there were no fighters. There were usually some fighters at Andrews, but the F-94s had all been taken to, I think it was Delaware, yeah. And they took hours to get there. This is Washington, for God's sake. And when they got there, of course, they had very little fuel. You know, we're dealing with somewhat restricted jet aircraft compared to today.
Right.
I don't think they had tanks. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But anyway, they didn't have any fuel. But they did see lights. And the radar of Andrews, the National Airport, locked onto the lights and vectored the aircraft onto the lights. And the lights seemed to be playing a cat and mouse game with the fighters, which, I mean, is quite frightening when you come to think. They were playing a cat and mouse game. They would swoop. They would swoop. They would swerve. They would accelerate to amazing speeds and then come down. The amazing speed was fantastic. An equal fantasy was the low speed, 50 miles an hour.
It was almost as if, Colin, they were trying to tell us, look, there's nothing you can do to stop us.
No, That's exactly what they were trying to say. Yes, exactly. Because the F-94s could do nothing. They were just like, double-decker buses, as far as it did. They could do nothing at all. They had loaded guns, of course, but they were forbidden to fire. The strange thing is that Ruppelt's book reveals a very deep level of thinking within American tactical intelligence here. In Britain, during the Second World War, of course, we developed the scramble philosophy. The Germans were only minutes away. We had to have pilots sitting in the cockpits. There had to be vectored or standing air patrols all the time, vectored by radar onto the Germans. American Air Force thinking has had great difficulty with this. There should have been standing patrols over Washington, for God's sake, if only because it was Washington, and pilots in the cockpit standing by. The Americans were not alert in this sense, tactically alert to it. They were fetching these fighters from Delaware, and the poor creatures didn't have any petrol, jet fuel.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing was a bloody fiasco. And, of course, they tried to cover this up, but the press got onto it immediately, and they brought out this amazing inefficiency as well as the UFO element.
Was it just
the Capitol's not defended.
Colin, was it just a one-night event, or did it happen over a period of the days?
It happened over a period of days. There were two significant weekends separated by 7 days. The first weekend, they phoned Ruppelt, get down here fast, and he was in Dayton, which is 350 miles away, I think, and it took time to get there. Of course, they didn't give him great transport, or money or means, this man. He had to get there and sort this out with the Pentagon. And he got there, and after the press were screaming, after the Pentagon was panicking, and he said, well, I'm going to investigate this. They didn't give him any assistance. He didn't have a single assistant. On the Monday morning he arrived at the Pentagon, he read about the previous night's incidents in the press, the newspaper headlines. He was then tried to get a car to go round the bases, and he was told that nobody but generals could have cars. And it so happened that General Sanford and General Garland were out of Washington at this time, and he couldn't get a car. And so he was told to take the public transport. The public transport. And then when he filed for expenses, they were told him that he could only have a certain low amount of expenses. And he said, am I supposed to pay for taxes, buses, and a hotel room? Because the Air Force wasn't paying him. They didn't give him any accommodation.
Unbelievable.
Yes, unbelievable, yeah. And so he was left literally standing at Washington bus stops, crossing his fingers to try and get through the red tape of the various bases. You just couldn't walk into a military base or the National Airport. And he gave up in disgust.